Vintage
Flashback.
Can you take a guess what this is? If you said 1940s television and radio system, you would be correct. So where is the television part hiding? Well, behind these doors. They actually had little covers that you could slide over, and there's the television screen, and there are the dials. There's a channel and some other TV settings right there. So now that we figured out where the television part is, this is where the audio and the radio part is. It just unfolds. I think that's the coolest thing ever. But there it is. And there's your different dials and knobs to adjust your radio and your settings. Let's take a closer look at the radio part. So let's start by actually looking at the on-off switch. There it is. You'll hear it click and it turns on. Now, actually, you had to wait a little bit for the tubes inside to warm up before you would actually get audio. So you had to give it a couple seconds for the device to warm on. You'll start to hear it any minute. Now, unfortunately, due to the age of this device, some of the capacitors inside have started to fail and they're on their last leg. So there is a quality issue and there's also a volume issue. But if you do listen closely, you'll actually hear it. Eventually, the capacitors will be replaced. And when they are, the quality and volume issues will be fixed. The knob that I'm turning now is the one that controls volume. So I'm turning down the volume, and now I'll turn the volume up. There is your radio tuning dial. If you see, I turn it, tunes the radio. And there's also preset buttons to different standard channels that were popular back in the 40s. And you can see as I press them, it automatically slides them to that place. What's kind of cool is the KYW one actually still works for legit KYW. Hasn't changed, unlike the other ones. Now, this is the most interesting one. This actually selects the different functions of the radio. And this particular system can do standard rate broadcast, which was AM. It can do shortwave. It can do FM, or what they call frequency modulation. And the little light that's on right now is actually a phono preamp for early electric record players. So this thing had it all. Now, this last setting would actually turn the television on, but unfortunately, the television is not working. A lot of these features, like the television and the electric record player and even FM, were brand new and cutting-edge technologies for the mid-1940s. Now under different lighting, you can see the lights for the selector much better. Let's take a quick look as I once again shuffle between what they call standard broadcast, or AM, shortwave frequency modulation, or FM, and some of the other settings that this vintage system has to offer. Personally, I just had to throw in a shot of these vacuum tubes warming up. I think it's really cool, and it's something that you don't see much anymore. Again, now that transistors are literally just about everywhere and have completely replaced vacuum tubes. Vintage
Flashback.
Can you take a guess what this one is? If you guessed early 1980s Radio Shack computer, you guessed correctly. During this time, hard drives were ridiculously expensive. So, most systems ran off 5 1/4 inch floppy drives. Unfortunately, due to the age of the computer, it's having some issues booting directly off the 5 1/4 inch floppy disks. Fortunately, there are still parts of this computer that work correctly, which we will demonstrate later. The weird patterns that you're seeing on the screen of the computer are not actually supposed to happen. Again, that's the glitch and the problem that the computer is having. Hopefully, I'll be able to fix it soon.
Here's a few of the different system disks. Depending on what you needed to do, depends on what disk you would load. This disk here contains the basic system. So it has the operating system, some basic programs, and the basic interpreter. If you could pony up the $3,000 or $11,000 in today's money and buy a hard drive, you could use this disk to initialize it and use it with the system. These two disks were used to load an interface with graphics. And you could do some basic computer stuff, believe it or not, with graphics instead of having to type in the commands. The base model that I have here would come with at least one 5 1/4-inch floppy drive. If you could pony up for an extra one, in the spot that I'm pointing, you could put in a second one and work with two disks at once. Booting from a disk might not work, but the legacy BASIC interpreter does. If I hold down the break key and turn on the computer, it'll enter me into that mode. You can see that it says cassette. I'll hit enter twice. From here, it'll load me into the BASIC interpreter, where I can type out some basic programs and do some other basic computer things with the programming language BASIC. Let's take a further look. I can use the print command followed by what I want to print out in quotes, well, to get the computer to actually print it. But if I put numbers in front of it, this will put it in a list. And I can actually, in a sense, write a program. So let's start off with that. Notice this time that I'm using 20, as this will be the next step in the program. I'll use the input command, and I'll use the variable nu for it. This input command will be used to input data into the program. This time, I'll use 30 for the third line, and I'll use another print command to print more text to the screen. Now, I'll put in 40, and I'll use the print once again, but this time, I'll just put the NU with no quotes. This will print out the value of the variable as opposed to the actual letters NU. Now, I can use the list command to list out all the lines of code that I've typed, and of course, I can use the run command to actually run and execute the program. Vintage Flashback. Take a guess what this is. If you guessed first IBM portable computer, you guessed right. This is the IBM 5100. It's even on the label of the computer. Let's turn on the system and take a look at it. Before floppy disks were big, computers actually used to use data cassette cartridges to store their data. There's one now. And I'll plug it in to the drive. Now, unfortunately, due to this being used over many, many years, it got a little kind of loose, so you have to jiggle the tape in just right to get it to work properly. So, how about we load some data off the tape and onto the computer? We'll enter the vars command into the computer to show any current variables or data that's listed in the computer. It's going to come out blank because there is none yet. Now we'll issue the command to load some data off the tape. With the load command, it's actually the command load, followed by the number of the drive, which is 1, because I only have one drive, and then the number of the program, which is a 3-digit number. So that's why it is 001, because it's the first program. And then the name of the actual program and data, which is test in this case. Once we execute that command, you'll see that the computer will start looking for that particular spot where that data is stored on the tape. And, obviously, it'll start reading it. Note, despite tape drives being able to store a lot more data, they're much slower than their hard drive and other disk drive counterparts. As you can see by this, it takes quite a while to load the data off because it has to fast forward and rewind to the particular spot where the data is stored. Now that we've loaded the data off the tape, we'll enter vars again, and you'll see this time it'll return a few variables that we had stored on the tape. For more videos about technology, not just vintage, like, follow, and subscribe. But most importantly, thanks for watching.